Welcome everybody to another episode of the Struggling Scientist podcast. We are a podcast by scientists, for scientists, anybody science adjacent, and perhaps even hobbyists. My name is Susanna and I'm here with my coach, Jaron.
Boo!
Very scary. Now as you all know, Halloween is almost upon us, and we have decided that in this episode, we are going to be facing the worst fears of every PhD student. Now we have some very scary stories that have been sent in by our audience, and we are going to be discussing what we would have done in these terrible, terrible situations and how we would solve them. And we are also very, very interested in hearing your opinions in the comments. So let's start. We're doing things a little bit differently today. I think our YouTube followers will already be able to see this because you are meeting us on our couch today.
Yes.
That's a first.
Very cozy, yet scary.
You're very, very scary. I felt like we needed some comfort in this situation with all the scary stories that have been sent in by our audience and that we have also collected from my guilty pleasures, which is the academia and PhD subreddits. Okay. Are you ready for the first one?
Sure, bring it. Bring me your scary, scary PhD academia story.
Okay. And they're not all very long. But they're all very terrible
very
situations.
Punchy,
The first one, my Microsoft Word software crashed the day before my proposal was due. It set me back 8 revisions. Now that's definitely a worst fear.
That is, there's nothing more of a hallmark of like a PhD fear than like you have a deadline or and you're writing
yes.
something and it just...
Yes. Even with like version 1 to 55.
And as we all know, all these revisions, they don't happen day after day. They're weeks.
Yes.
Multiple. You don't remember what was in the first revision.
No, I had it once with my, not with my writing software, not with Word, but with my the software that I was making my images with, Illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, at some point, I opened the file and there were just blank spots in there.
Oops.
That wasn't great.
And how long did that take you to fix?
Well, I don't know if I ever really got it back to the point where it was. Mm-hmm. But I did fix it, of course, because I had all the original data.
Mm-hmm.
Still, thank God. But
yeah, but you never get back the all the changes that you've made. Work is just
this
lost.
This text needs to be a little bit more to the left. All of that needs to be redone at that point. Yes.
Oof. Yeah.
Pretty rough.
Yeah. Also unclear in this story of like divisions from just their supervisor, other co-authors.
Mm.
Yeah. Because if it's very technical specific, that you need one co-author for to who's an expert in that, you have to revisit
them. You might
still
have those comments in your email though, but still reworking them all into a version from 5 weeks ago, it's horrible.
Yeah. And let's face it, like whenever you're writing and getting to a late stage of writing, it's because you have a deadline that you're trying to meet to submit, or like your supervisor is on you to finish this. Getting set back 8 revisions is a significant blow to the when you're expecting to finish this paper.
For sure. My advice would be to never trust software and back up. A lot.
Oh, it's great. Extra backups. Yeah.
Yeah. But then I would also say that you then have to have your backups somewhere else than just on your computer, because otherwise that might also be.
Yeah. Problematic. Yeah.
Yeah. And even if I work on a Google Docs or anything, I download versions of that every once in a while, just so that if Google Docs crashes, it's also saved.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Definitely a worst PhD fear.
Yeah, I wouldn't have any further advice beyond indeed like more backups. I think this is one of those things like it happens once and from then on you're going to be paranoid about it. It'll never happen or hopefully never happen again.
Yes. But at the same time, I usually do make backups before revisions.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will still have to redo the last parts that you have done. So you're never safe.
Yeah, final 7, version 7.
Exactly.
So I have our next story that came to us from a user on Instagram. I was under a lot of pressure. Final year PhD student, mom of a toddler moving to a different city. In the middle of my PhD, I changed my thesis topic and department. after all the stress, took a day off and had a long weekend that went great. I came back and I found somebody took all my protein samples and left them on the bench at room temperature for at least a few days before I discovered them. I was planning to run a Western blot next week. I don't have the time or resources to collect new samples that I have been working on for months.
Oh, that's so bad.
That is, I wouldn't say every PhD's worst fear, but like if you work in a lab with protein samples, that's leaving it on the table at some point is everyone's fear. And to have someone else in your lab have done that.
That's the question though, right? I've also left some samples overnight on a bench once upon a time, which is in itself already horrible. But indeed, somebody else did.
I also wonder to what extent like they figured out who it was. Like, did they come clean? And what happened?
But does that make it better if you know who it is?
No, you'll never contact that person again.
I'm not sure if it's that bad. I mean, it depends a little bit. If it's like real mouse data or human data samples, then it becomes, of course, worse. But at the same time,
It does say samples that I've been working on for months. And I can imagine being a fourth-year PhD student with a toddler.
Oh, yes.
There are so many things going on here that I this would be a heavy blow, I think, for anyone in that.
But leaving things on the table at room temperature and not putting them away in the freezer or leaving on machines overnight that you shouldn't leave on machine, those are definitely things that wake you up in the middle of the night.
If you work in a lab, you felt this at some point.
And then all of a sudden you're up in the middle of the night sitting straight up in your bed and you're wondering like, should I go to the lab to check?
Yeah. Yeah. So, but this also just makes this one a bit of a harder thing to give an opinion or advice on just because someone else.
Yes,
but also someone else did it to you, to them, right? It's not like they forgot it. So it's also like, what was the intent of the person who did that? Would just labeling your samples better as like, hey, this is mine, or
make aliquot. And if somebody else needs to use your samples, give them a little aliquot.
Yeah, that would be, I think, a great, and communicate clearly, like it's there, you can have that, but don't touch this.
Yes.
Yeah, I think indeed.
And I know it's a lot more work to make 4 aliquots of each sample, but it might be worth it, especially if multiple people are working with something that is as delicate as protein samples.
Mm-hmm. And especially if it takes months to be able to get these samples back. And so like it might few extra hours, extra days to set up these things and make sure that it's safe might be worth it.
Yeah. But then you do need to know that somebody else is going to use them, of course.
Yeah. It could also just have been as easy as like someone else grabbing something from like the freezer and then took it out, took your samples out and just forgot to put it back.
Looking under all the boxes and then putting a box. Yeah, that also happens. Yes.
Like, what do you do against that? Like,
there's not a lot you can do.
Human error is can happen. But that is certainly a fear for anyone working in the lab.
Yes. Next story is more about interpersonal lab relationships.
The worst kind.
And it's called, I think, the senior postdoc in the lab hates me. And this is the one of the ones that come from Reddit.
Starting out with a strong title already.
Yes. Okay. Every time my supervisor gives me some good feedback, the postdoc shoots it down by saying something like, actually, it's not that amazing. Or I don't think your work is that good. I don't know why. I've tried to be nice to her so many times. I'm trying to see the good and trying to find excuses for her behavior. I'm just worried that my supervisor will start to believe her opinions about my work instead of his own views that I'm doing a good job. Just for context, in the first year of my PhD, I was on the top of my cohort across several universities. We had assessments and visas a bit like MRS, but not exactly. And what should I do? How worried should I be?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Like that you have a postdoc that's sort of being difficult and
but it also sounds like they're completely undermining everything the PI says.
Yeah, like that's kind of like the worst possible colleague that you can have in terms of.
But it's at some point it's not just an attack on you anymore, but if every time the PI says, "Huh, good job," and then postdoc chimes in like, "Well, actually it's not that great."
Mm-hmm.
Then they're also undermining their professor or their PI or their supervisor.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is weird. And then I start to wonder if it's actually an attack on you or if they just don't like the way the supervisor is setting up the group and the people they're selecting, or...
Yeah, but it's also like, I get like providing a balanced level of criticism or feedback. Like, you don't want to say like everything you do is amazing. You want to also add like, okay, you can... But just contradicting the supervisor saying like it's actually just not that amazing. Mm-hmm. That's not really constructive. They're just like tearing it down. And what value does this add to either the supervisor, the group, the person? Like, that doesn't do anything for anyone.
No. No, it's weird. I do think the comment about how they were at the top of their class is a little bit weird.
I sort of interpret it as like, I am sort of a capable researcher, PhD student, like trying to defend yourself, right?
Yeah, it does sound like
right?
they're really starting to become less confident.
And that's also just the thing, like the side effect of like, if you're constantly trying to tear down someone, like they're not going to feel as confident sharing information or like sharing, working on their things anymore at a certain point.
And it's also really hard to judge a PhD's progress because that's such an individual path and an individual situation. Yeah. Like, just doing a good experiment isn't going to mean that you're all of a sudden going to have a good paper 1 year
now.
So it's kind of a weird thing to judge somebody on.
No, for sure. I do wonder whether maybe things are not going well for the postdoc themselves, that's why they're like, well, actually, science is hard and you're not doing that great of a job. You're just sort of getting lucky.
Why do you need to undermine somebody else?
Yeah,
exactly. But again, I'm starting to wonder if this is actually aimed at the PhD students or at something else, or just general unhappiness in the lab, or...
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of hard to tell, right? Because we're getting the opinion of the PhD student and how they are, their connection with their PI, but we don't get to hear how the postdoc's connection with the PI is. Mm. Maybe that's not a bit rockier.
Yeah. And it sounds like the PhD student is very worried about the PI starting to believe this. I don't think that should be the biggest worry, because I think, honestly, this doesn't sound like the best PI postdoc relationship either.
No, exactly.
So for advice in this situation, I would try not to take it personally and not worry too much about, but I don't think that the PI is not going to all of a sudden change their opinion based on somebody just being annoying.
Yeah, exactly. Like, during your career, academic or otherwise, you're going to encounter difficult people. And yeah, it's kind of unfortunate, but you kind of have to learn to deal with these people. And at the very least, it does sound like they have a supportive PI that's like very excited about the work that they're doing. So I think focus on the good, try to work around the bad as much as possible in this case. And just keep going.
Yeah. And that's like, every time my supervisor gives me some good feedback, the postdoc should sit down by saying something like, it's actually not that amazing. Sounds just also like shooting down the PI's opinion.
Yeah.
I don't understand the situation. Yeah. What is this postdoc thinking? This is not a good thing to do.
Yeah, they sort of think, I assume they're sort of like just being critical is being smart, and just like, well, no.
You have people like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's easy to be critical. It's hard to give good feedback and help.
Very true.
So our next story comes to us from one of our followers on Instagram. My hard drive that has all my backup data died. I'm not certain of what I've lost, but it was years of backups. Submitting a paper this month. Another great fear, I guess, of just losing
a
ton. Well, I guess in this case, it's backups and not necessarily...
Yeah, but I also have some of my big data that at some point just doesn't fit on your work computer anymore, and you have to put it on your backup drive or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So that I wouldn't assume that nothing is lost here.
Yeah. One of my biggest fears when it comes to something like this is when you've submitted the paper, maybe you still have everything to make the graphs and present all the data and stuff. But when you get the revisions or like the comments from the reviewers, that they, can you show this? And your supervisor's like, oh, I remember you did this experiment or you did something. Can you add that? But it's somewhere in your backups and you didn't present that data earlier or anything like that. That's gone. You need to completely redo experiments and redo all that. So that is potentially lost effort.
Yeah.
There. Yeah.
Oh, harsh.
Yeah. And it's sort of hard to necessarily give a specific advice to this because they have backups. Yeah. And it's on their hard drive. So,
yeah. And I've also, so our institute has also their own sort of network, but I've also heard that that gets just deleted.
Yeah.
Every once in a while with an update or just
something just goes wrong.
When a PhD student leaves, their entire account just gets blocked, deleted. Then that's also all gone. So I think worst fear, especially also for PI, for people who are leaving from the lab and
Yeah, there's just so much work that goes into a PhD and goes into a project for submitting a paper that just like, and there are so many places where it can go wrong, where you just lose all that work, lose all that effort and lose all that information.
Although at the same time, storing it in a way that it's useful for other people is also an art in itself.
Yes. Because even if you store it in a way that it's like your PI can easily access it, it's like, oh yeah, this is what came out of that. This is that specific experiment. It's like, okay, but I still need the raw data. Where's that raw data? Yeah. Like,
And do I actually know which treatment was in which well of a qPCR plate or anything like that? That's hard.
Yeah. So there's not really like a specific more backups. Well, that in terms of advice, like
I would always say two backups. Yes.
But what would you use in like another external hard drive?
Or some sort of cloud-based system if your university has that.
Yeah.
I have it on the general cloud of the lab.
Mm-hmm.
At least the biggest data I have there, the big experiments, and then on my own personal hard drive.
Mm. Yeah.
And still on my computer, most of it, but not everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's probably just good general advice for PhD students, sort of data maintenance and just making sure that your things are safe.
Very important. Also, the PI has to be in charge of that and have some sort of lab cloud system set up that you can use.
Yeah, exactly. Because you could do all the work to set it up, but if they never use it, know how to like bother with it or anything like that, then it's just wasted effort on your side to protect something. Like, it needs to be sort of mutual.
Another fear of many, many, many PhD students.
Oof.
At our annual virus meeting, held in German, but talks are in English, I was introduced by the chair in German and my brain started to talk in German. I realized this after the first slide, looked at my supervisor and asked, "Do I do the talk in German now?" It was so incredibly embarrassing.
Yeah, I think every PhD student has fears of like being at a conference and something going wrong with during your presentation.
Yes. I don't think this is so bad.
No.
It sounds like most of this is in German anyway. Mm-hmm. People understand it. Nobody will remember but you that this went wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it was caught pretty early, right? Like after the first slide. Yeah, right. So I think it's not the end of the world.
No.
But I do think that this sort of is part of like that bigger fear of presentations going wrong.
Or pronouncing words very weird or like things like that.
Yeah, indeed. I think, yeah. Yeah, in terms of general advice for this.
Don't worry too much.
Yeah, don't fret. No one will remember this, honestly.
No.
Like, and it was caught on time. And there are way worse things you can do.
Yes.
Worry about those.
Well, that's such good advice.
Yeah, there's bigger fish out there that can eat you.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.
Oof. Okay, so the next one is an interesting one. It takes a little bit of a plot twist, but it was sent to us anonymously via the email. I went abroad to get a checkup on my gallbladder and came back to the UK Sunday evening. Still in pain, I decided to kill it drinking half a liter bottle of whiskey. That already starts sounding scary. The next day, my phone was ringing. The whole morning, I was still drunk in bed. Around the lunchtime, I heard profound knocking to the front door of my house. It was my supervisor. He came to check up if I had not abandoned my PhD studies. Yes, he called 31 times before he decided to come over. Scary determination. Woohoo, he is now a professor.
That sounds like a little bit too involved.
It's not quite micromanaging, but it's very much like, I didn't see you for a little bit of time. Where have you been? Have you
quit? Yeah. Did they not know about the whole surgery?
I'm starting to wonder indeed, like, whether there was just some sort of failure of communication of like, hey, I'll be like X, Y, and Z.
I mean, it also didn't sound like they were checking up on you because they knew that you were supposed to be back in the lab that day.
Like, did you
and
die?
They were worried. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That I can, but sounds like a bit too much. A bit.
Yeah. Like, I'm reading this and I'm trying to figure out when did they leave for the gallbladder surgery, because they said they came back on a Sunday evening, but it doesn't really say how long they were gone for the gallbladder surgery. And the supervisor called 31 times without sort of context of like how long of a period they were away. Still calling 31 times and then going physically there, like, are you still busy with your PhD?
Yeah. It sounds like perhaps they didn't notify the PI about the surgery or something like that, because otherwise a bit weird.
Yeah.
You should let your PI know if you need a small break.
Yeah.
And your PI should be okay with it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, this is something got lost in the communication here. Multiple things, maybe.
Yeah. But your PI standing on your doorstep, that's definitely a fear.
Yeah.
Your boss.
Especially like when you're still in a drunken state.
Oh.
And you're just like recovering from surgery and your supervisor's like, are you still busy? Why aren't you in the lab?
Yes. Advice on this? Either have better communication or set some boundaries.
Yes. I think regardless, boundaries would be good and communication would be good.
Yes.
Yeah. Still, I've never heard of a PI this dedicated to finding you and knowing.
No. I am really wondering if our audience members perhaps also had one day something like this. If you have advice as well, please let us know in the comments.
Mm.
I think the people who send us these stories would also love to hear additional advice, of course.
Yeah, at what number of attempts at a phone call is too much from your PI? Like 31? 20? Is that our, like...
Oh, yeah. How many emails after each other?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, what's the magic number? That's still a normal amount for the PI.
Yes. The PIs out there are also wondering, of course.
We're trying to provide the best advice out there, not only for PhD students, but also PIs.
Okay, now our next story is a little bit more, I would say, toxic PI.
Oh, also classical.
Classical fear of every PhD student. Well, I would say when you're applying for PhD positions, this is like the worst fear of like...
Yeah.
Okay. First day I was in the lab, the PI yelled at the PhD students for getting a decimal point wrong in an experiment. He only stopped when she cried.
Wow.
The proteins we were using weren't even that rare, and we had dozens of vials and only used microliters at a time. He did the same to a student from another lab who I was helping train on an instrument.
Wow.
I was told that if I didn't stop going home every other weekend, I wouldn't graduate on time. I was already working between 36 and 50 hours a week in the lab, depending on my teaching schedule, plus weekends if an experiment demanded. He said this to me on a Monday after I had spent the weekend during an experiment. I left the following week. I was also asked to do an experiment I had never done before using an instrument I was unfamiliar with. When I said I didn't know how but was willing to learn, he said he didn't have time to show me. When he couldn't get the experiment to work, he threw a crystal cuvette full of biological samples at the bench so hard it shattered, and shards covered in bacteria-laden broth went everywhere, including on me.
What the hell?
That's a proper toxic PI.
That is like, it's one, like, verbally, but also fit, like, in, yeah, physically.
Throwing
like,
stuff around yeah. in the lab.
Yeah.
If I understand it correctly, they have already left.
They have, yeah. Like, yeah,
that's my advice.
That's honestly, that like...
leave.
No, yeah. I don't know how long they've been doing their PhD already there. And like, yeah. Obviously it's a shame like to...
And then having a teaching schedule and on top of that, working 36 to 50 hours in the lab.
And also coming in on the weekends to do additional experiments.
And then still getting told that they can't go home every other weekend.
Yeah, no. It's PIs like this to just ruin like PhD students, or just ruin academia and science in general.
Yeah, and you should also not be afraid to leave that you cannot start anew, because especially if you leave in the first year, there's definitely a chance to start over somewhere else.
For sure.
Later on, I can, like, you have sort of the sunken cost problem that you, like, I have already put 2 years into this project, so you don't want to leave that behind.
Mm-hmm.
But if you see this in the beginning, leave.
Yeah.
Also, yelling at a student from another lab. Oh, he's not only doing it to his own PhD students or whatever, but he is apparently so allowed to do this that he can also do it to other students. That is when...
In addition to like the fact that they've already left, like good, you know.
On them.
Yeah. But also just file a complaint, and at least with like the HR or whatever, like the institute, like that they're also just aware of this person. They probably are.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like this is the very first time they're doing something like this. Most likely.
I don't know how that works in other countries, but I think the problem in the Netherlands is very much also that it's the people who get the best grants who have the most PhD students and not necessarily the best supervisors.
Yeah, exactly.
So you aren't actually like rated on how well you supervise students or anything like that.
That's sort of just a... it's cool if you can also supervise well, but as long as you get grants and do that, that's the main thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunate. Our next story comes to us from one of our followers on Instagram. I lost all my samples of a 6-month experiment because of COVID. I worked in a different country and couldn't go back to the research center because of travel restrictions during the pandemic. And people from there never sent them to my country. I had to begin a new project from zero. Poop emoji. It took me an extra 1.5 years to finish. Oh, because the cherry on top was that when I thought I was done with everything, my PI passed away. And I was about to submit my thesis manuscript, so I had to postpone my defense. But I finally finished on May 2024. I'm still processing the trauma. Haha. That is...
Okay, so if I understand it correctly, they were doing a PhD somewhere, but then because of COVID, they had to go back home and continue something there, and then they wouldn't send the samples over.
Exactly, so they lost all their samples from 6 months of a big experiment. Not the end of the world, but still pretty bad.
No. I totally understand, especially if that's in the beginning of a PhD, that it absolutely feels like the end of the world, but honestly, the first year of PhD is usually a waste of time anyway.
Yeah, no, I guess because PhDs in like the UK, I believe, only have 3 years or something like this. So like depending on how long you have funding.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's also been everything.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I...
But then also the PI passed away.
Yeah.
The new one. That's a lot.
Took them an extra 1.5 years to finish.
Honestly, not that bad.
Honestly, I'm surprised that they still managed all of this and like still...
Yeah.
Given everything,
I think everybody had like delay because of Corona, and sounds like they handled everything great.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I honestly don't have any more advice than keep going.
Keep your PI alive. I don't know how, what else. They say to manage your PI. This is what they mean.
Wow.
I'm sorry, but I think honestly, like, this PhD student just handled things as well as they can, given the circumstances. So yeah, I'm joking here, but honestly, I think kudos to them.
Yeah.
So yeah.
My phone got stolen with my whole data inside. What was worse is I thought my phone backed up the data, only to find out that nothing was backed up. The tears I cried. I had to start afresh collecting new data, which added another year. This was my worst nightmare, and my family couldn't understand that I didn't care about the phone, but my data in the phone was what made my life turn upside down.
Oof. Yeah, we
are having a lot of lost data. In here.
Back up your data, people. If you've learned anything from this episode, it's back up your data.
Back up your data, yeah.
But I really like...
I wonder what type of data you store on your phone.
Exactly, yeah.
That doesn't seem like the safest place to store research data.
Yeah, I'm sort of wondering whether they have their phone connected to like something, and then if the phone breaks down, like deleted everything from where it's like saved. I highly doubt that, but I'm sort of reaching, trying to explain like why.
Maybe if it was a proper work phone, but then still, my advice would be to not have data on your phone.
No,
especially if it's your personal phone, that is not a good place to save
for sure
your data.
Yeah, I can only imagine, indeed, like if it's something like a work phone and maybe in certain situations, like you use that phone to take pictures like field work or something like that. I don't know, like I would still suggest just
field work perhaps.
Yeah, or in places where there's like a specific phone, like no, but I believe they said that it's their phone. That
it's
they
their
love.
Phone, yeah. Because their family was really confused about why they weren't more upset about losing the phone.
Yeah.
So it's it sounds like a personal phone.
Yeah. Okay, then I really feel for them for losing a lot of like 1 year of their data and stuff like that. But ultimately, I still think don't keep the data on your phone, though.
No.
Like hard drives and computers are better for this, or like the cloud, indeed, like those kinds of things. Yeah, but it still is painful, I guess, to also admit like you've lost 1 year of data to all the people, like your supervisor and stuff like that, because some for whatever reason you had it on your phone.
Like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that in their field of research it makes more sense that it is on the phone, but
yeah,
and especially if it's a whole year worth of data, there should have been a backup somewhere.
There definitely should be backup. If anything, backups can save you a lot of headaches.
Yes.
Backups for your backups.
Yes, exactly. And don't pay for it yourself, but declare it.
Yes, if it depends maybe on the university and the institute and stuff like that. But if at all possible, do that.
Your university should organize something that you can backup stuff.
Yes.
Or your professor, PI, whoever.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, we're going into our last story.
The last one.
No guarantees that it will be the scariest. This last story comes to us from the Academia subreddit. It's a bit of a long one, but bear with me. Friend's PhD advisor was of the opinion that if you needed more than 4 hours of sleep each night, you weren't cut out for a career in science. He demanded long hours from everyone, including the undergrads. Many, many problems with him, but we'll focus on his abuse of undergrads. Number one. He constantly complained to the undergrad research coordinator that the undergrad courses were getting in the way of doing research. He spent many hours each quarter arguing with the coordinator about what undergrad priorities should be and complaining about how insufficient the program was at preparing the students for a career in science. The coordinator was steadfast in the stance of that their courses came first. Okay. Number two, one of the undergrads lined up a summer research opportunity at a prestigious East Coast lab. He started drilling into her his if you need more than 4 hours of sleep philosophy and emphasized how important it was for her to make a good impression in the lab. She left for her summer internship. 2 weeks later, she was found unconscious in the lab and rushed to the hospital where she basically was treated for exhaustion.
Oh. Yeah.
There's still more though.
Okay.
It, yeah. She literally worked herself to a point of collapse. After treatment, she was sent home from the program. Upon return to her university, she wanted to re-enter the lab and continue doing research. But the PI there told her that she was clearly unfit for science. But the PI told her that she was clearly unfit for science and to not come back.
Oh, that's also harsh.
Yeah. We do have somewhat of an update. Karma bit him in the ass, though. He had a progressive congenital condition and ended up on an organ transplant list. His doctors urged him to get rest and cut back at work for medical reasons, but he claimed that MDs don't know anything and they're trying to sabotage my work. He returned from a conference, checked into the hospital to get a blood transfusion, and within 24 hours was septic with multiple organ failure, and he died a few days later. We always say he worked himself to death.
Wow.
That is a level of toxicity that even affects apparently the PI. That.
Yeah.
Holy hell.
That, and then also saying that somebody who has literally worked themselves to the point of exhaustion they aren't ready. Oh, well, that's such toxic.
Yeah, it's just like, what are you even thinking? Like.
Yeah. And. Like, this is a very extreme case, mm-hmm. but there are many, many situations where people are pushed past their limits,
mm-hmm.
And that has consequences for your health, and that's so bad, because your health is not something that's just going to magically return to you
if you
ruin it.
No, exactly.
And it's going to have consequences after your PhD as well, and you don't even know if you're going to stay in science and if this is all going to be worth it. And on top of that, it's... The whole process is so much based on luck as well,
mm-hmm.
that I don't believe that just by working that little bit harder to push yourself past your limit is going to make the difference in making or breaking your career.
No, I mean, sleep is also just important for you to be able to show up the way that you want day in and day out, right? Like 4 hours of sleep, you're basically showing up drunk to the lab, kind of like you're not mentally fit to be operating, like doing very complex surgeries or experiments and stuff like that in the lab or whatever kind of research you're doing. How are you thinking critically with four hours of sleep?
Yes, indeed.
Like, indeed. What? Like, I certainly can understand that there are definitely some experiments that are long, mm-hmm. and every now and then those happen. Like, they might go into the weekend, they might be like 12-hour incubation time, you need to come back later in the day or do more multiple stuff. But this is extreme on like a persistent level. Like, you cannot maintain this level of exhaustion.
No.
As you
clearly see. Just toxic PI and don't listen to people like that, because they are obviously also not good for their own health.
No, exactly. As clearly demonstrated. Like,
indeed, a large part of your job is also to think critically, and it doesn't happen if you just push yourself into a sleep deprivation state.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, it's not about just being in the lab and doing experiments and working 20 hours a day. It's also about reflecting on what you've done in your experiments and the results and stuff like that. So,
yes.
Yeah.
That was already the end of our episode. Now, we would love to hear your opinions as well and your advice on the different situations and the different fears that we tackled today. There were some really, really scary stories in there. Now, for our listeners, if you have any questions, suggestions, or comments, you can reach out to us via thestrugglingscientist.com. You can also check out our newsletter and sign up for it, also known as our Journal of the Struggling Scientist. And if you have enjoyed this episode, then leave us a rating on your favorite podcast listening platform or YouTube, because this helps us reach out to more struggling scientists out there. We're also on social media. Jeroen, which ones are those again?
X/Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Threads, and LinkedIn.
Yes. Thank you so much, and we hope to see you next time. Bye.